Representative Johnson, I'm not sure what we gave the employees of the fairs. The reason I gave the answer I did is that's the rules under which the state of Oregon works. At least, for me, they are.
Okay, if a private employer came, let's turn this around, some private employee makes a complaint to your outfit because some employer did just what I said, which is on a circumstance where everybody knows that the job was over, but it was on a Saturday, and so the employer, to comply with the law, said, you're not fired, you're not terminated, we're just suspended without pay, to use your phrase, and the employer gives him a check on Monday. He comes to you and says, this is illegal, what are you going to do?
As a practical matter, we probably wouldn't do anything. But that person has a private right of action. It would probably be up to the court to decide what the actual termination date was.
Mr. Chairman, I have a feeling the court would apply a certain word to that, which would be sham. The problem is, of course, we shouldn't talk about public employees because you're dealing with civil service rules, and some elements of which are bargains, some of which are by statute, some of which are in the regulations themselves. And now if an employer had that kind of a deal where they had a union contract and union contract said you will suspend without pay, I could see saying that's not a sham because that's what the deal calls for. But we're getting too much into some esoterics here that we're really getting into what might be something you'd litigate rather than be able to predict through social legislation.
Mr. Chair, the policy of most larger employees, I don't know about smaller employees, is not to fire on the spot. Most larger employees take the position that they're going to suspend you subject to further investigation, which gives them a day or two to do the investigation, decide whether they're actually going to fire you. And in those cases, in fact, in our own union, there was an individual who started to file a complaint and ended up dropping him at the advice of your office because they weren't terminated until it was on a Monday evening at midnight. He got caught smoking dope, and it was Wednesday morning after investigation that they finally terminated him. And at the time they terminated, they gave him his check. He wasn't terminated until Wednesday, until the investigation was complete. I guess it gets back to the same discussion everyone's having. The employer has that ability right now. He doesn't have to terminate you on the spot. I don't know how you get to some of the other concerns about some other people, but I guess if you're not firing, it's in your law, your interpretation of the law is at the time you're actually terminated. Am I correct?
We don't want to see the roustabouts being paid next Friday. We want something worked out where people aren't using sham arrangements. We want something that's set up where we've made the decisions as to what's fair. And I think that's what you're willing to work with us on.
That's correct, Representative Max.
Yeah, I guess I'd just like to respond to Representative Watt. All they're doing is enforcing the laws that we pass. And if we don't like the law, then it's up to us to change that policy.
That's why we're happy to be here.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
I can't resist adding to that, though, that I do appreciate Mr. Watt raising the issue a little bit because I too get the sense that the witnesses before us right now have less than a neutral approach to this problem. And if the employers of Oregon have a problem and the employees of Oregon have a problem, what we need the state Bureau of Labor and Industries to do is help resolve that problem, not take one side or the other just because of historical approaches that have been taken in the past. And I personally appreciate a little bit more neutral approach on that kind of issue, and I just want to throw that out.
Yeah, I think they're bound to interpret the law the way they see it.
I'm not addressing what they do in response to current complaints. I'm talking about the bills in front of us.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. See, Floyd Bauer's here now. Do you want to testify, Floyd? You don't look like Floyd.
I'm Floyd Bauer. I'm the manager of the fairgrounds in Jefferson County. We've encountered a few problems with meeting our payroll. Raven, why don't you introduce
yourself? I'm Raven Davis from Polk County Fair, and I was going to tell you how our payroll experience is, too, after Floyd gets here.
How we operate at the present time is we're a small, I consider ourselves probably a small business. I have 6 to 8 people that I hire part-time during the fair that last from a week to 10 days, depending on our needs. and we go up and down in that number. In our particular situation, the majority of employees are through on Sunday afternoon. We really don't know what time or how many of them are going to leave because we pay our premiums out to our exhibitors in cash, and employees do that, and we do our cleanup. And at various times, we don't need as many as other times, and I go around and say, you know, you're done, we don't need you now, or we're done, we're going to close the gates, and we can all go home. The way I do it then is I have to run the time cards if the employee fills them out correctly, which I have encountered some problems with employees taking them home and not leaving them on the premises, not being able to get them back at the time we're through. But then I have to take them down to the county clerk's office, who in turn gives them to, fills them out, but then she has to transfer the funds from the treasurer's office back to her through the computer, and she needs people to do this. And so to do this on Sunday afternoon for her is impossible, and she hasn't done this.
Can I inquire on that point?
Sure.
And if we told you to do otherwise, people would be asked after you for fiscal irresponsibility and financial mismanagement of the fair funds, I assume.
That's true.
All right. Go ahead.
The problems, of course, that we run into other than that is also trying to get all the pertinent information from our employees. The lack of time then to really do a double check as to whether the times were actually turned in and whether all of the deductions are being made. My county clerk tells me that, and some of the people we do hire work for the school system, and so they're also public employees, which become public employees when they come for us, and so she has to make sure she gets all of those things out for the public employees things, as well as the withholdings that are required by taxes. Most of the supervision, in fact, all of the supervision is done by me. We also have ongoing at the fair about three contractual types of services, and I'm checking with them all the time too, so we don't always get with these people all the time. Like I said, most of our part-time employees really don't understand our payroll system, and they don't we set them up when they come in with all our paperwork, and we tell them this is where the time cards are supposed to stay, and they come in and manually fill out. We don't have a time clerk, and we do trust them to do that.
They fill out their own time cards?
That's correct. And I do at the end of the day try and come back and check them. Sometimes it's the next morning to make sure that they're somewhat within the time that we've said that they're working. I have terminated a couple of employees throughout the fair. One of them just plain lazy, wasn't doing the work I wanted, and I told him I didn't need him anymore. Another one I found taking some things home that he didn't belong to him, and so I said, we don't need you there either, and we did not pay them when we terminated them, but we didn't let them back on the grounds. We probably were in violation.
Sure.
So, admittedly, you were violating the law.
We didn't want employees that were stealing left on the grounds.
Well, I just...
Yeah, I guess that we didn't. I didn't pay him when I told him I didn't want him on there anymore.
You should have told him he was suspended without
pay. I found that out today.
You dealt with it whenever you wanted
excluded
to.
From the fair.
Yeah, I would suggest if we don't make a corrections law, that's the way for you to handle it, is to suspend people without pay until you can...
One question I have then, I guess, is that we come back, and I heard you mentioned here, when I suspend them without pay and they walk out the gate and fall down and break their arm, are they a workman comp problem then?
I'll escort them out the gate. Once they're outside the gate, they're off. Oh,
then I have to leave my job to take them out.
Okay. Unless they're riding a company bus home or
something. Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I'm assuming you heard the bully's testimony that all things are possible.
Yes.
Do you think it would be... out of line for you to request your county commissioners to make the treasurer's office available on Saturdays and Sundays, knowing that your termination of your fair is on a weekend, and that they be prepared to produce those payroll checks at the termination? Do you think that since all things are possible, is that a problem?
They would probably be willing to do that if they could take it out of my fair roll budget to pay the overtime to those employees.
Okay. So there is a solution in that regard, too, if we want.
Possibly. Really, we feel the 72 hours would help us to do a better job in making sure that we could get the checks to them correctly, and most of our employees are there in the city or in the county. Some of them are migrants, but a minority.
Wouldn't you be able to live a little more comfortably with an exemption for fares that said a fare which ends any time between midnight Friday and 6 a.m. Monday can pay its terminated employees by 5 p.m. Monday. You could live with that, couldn't you?
Yes, we could live with that.
Any other testimony?
No.
Our case is a little different. We're unique. We have our own restaurant services. We hire about 50 people to run those services during the fair. Our day ends at 6 o'clock on Sunday. That's when the fair closes. Usually cleanup takes anywhere from 6 to 10, depending on how bad things are. I requested that our county pay out on Sunday evening on termination. They didn't want to do it. They didn't have the manpower to do it. We're a small county. Of course, they probably would take it out of our budget. I didn't suggest that, and I hope I never have to, because we just don't have the budget to cover that. We have enough trouble covering our own man hours. When we terminate about 50 people, we have to do their timesheets, which basically we just have to do that one day's timesheet, finish their hours. We turn the payroll in on Monday morning. Then it has to go through our personnel office. They review everything, make sure all the paperwork signed, the I-9s, the W-4s, the workmen's, all that stuff has to do with payroll, which is mind-boggling. Then it has to be approved through the fiscal services because they also have to review it. Then they cut the check, then the commissioners have to sign the checks. All in all, it takes us at least 2 days to cover all this and then try to get everyone back together to pay them. Usually we request they check back in for their checks on Wednesday or Thursday. For us, it's really not feasible to pay them by 5 o'clock just because the county can't have the checks back to us by that time. That's where our stumbling block is getting it through the county system because it is a long process.
Representative Repine?
Thank you. Run me back through your players that to make all things possible. Who would you have to bring online for the weekend to make anything possible in this case?
Give me the
litany of people who would be players here.
Okay, one would be the lady that works in the personnel department, two of the fiscal services personnel, and at least one or two county commissioners to sign checks.
Yeah, I don't think that's out of line.
And if they would allow us probably to cut our own paychecks, we could possibly have them done Monday at 5:05. But they don't allow us to do that. Everything has to be run through the county on the county's time.
That's our situation also.
Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Your particular situation is affected because you're a government fair.
Correct.
A government fair.
Well, in the sense that county or city.
Personally.
We are, right, they are county.
I think the majority of the fairs in the state are run through the county personnel offices.
So if we actually limited something even further to the public employer that's running a fair, you'd still be all right. I mean, I can understand that because of all the other restrictions we put on government that you're in a unique situation. A private employer doesn't have to account to the public for the management of the private employer's funds. So I don't care who signs their paychecks and when they're signed, as long as they're good.
Mm-hmm.
But we do care about who signs government paychecks, and I can understand why in rural counties in particular, the county commissioners insist on still personally signing those checks. We have laws that say they're personally liable for those funds.
Right.
And I can see why they don't want to let someone else sign checks. And those laws aren't crazy. They've been enforced sometimes. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Mike McKellum.
Interesting issue.
Yeah, why didn't we pass a law that the government exempt him and private?
Oh, okay, good.
Okay.
It's because of all the rules we impose on government.
Yeah, just make it mandatory that counties have to meet the payroll requirements on the legal.
Welcome to the Labor Committee, both of you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Mike McKellum. With me today is Greg Mint. Greg's with the Oregon Lodging Association. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Restaurant Association. We represent over 3,000 restaurant and beverage establishments in the state, and I believe Greg's association has well over 800 members in the lodging industry. The bill that we've introduced would change the delivery of the final paychecks. And I've heard a lot of interesting comments today. And when we drafted the legislation, our intent was to exempt any existing contractual arrangements between the employee and the employer. And so if a union is in existence that has some kind of a contractual agreement that outlines the way the employee is compensated, then, in fact, this bill would not affect them. And so I'd just like to make that real clear as we start out. I'd also like to say that, you know, it was pointed out that this bill or the existing rule was written in the 20s. Well, payrolls have changed substantially since the 20s, and in fact, they change every day, it seems. The federal regulations regarding the payroll system has changed every year I've been in existence to some degree, whether it's the state's regulations in terms of amounts of workers' compensation or the different withholdings. They all change. So it is an ever-changing system, and it is tough for small employers to deal with on an immediate basis. As was pointed out earlier, a lot of firms are using outside payroll systems. These things are handy. As long as it's 8 to 5, they're pretty handy. You get outside of 8 to 5 Monday to Friday, and these things don't work so good. You can maybe force them to work, as has been pointed out, but it'll cost you. There's no doubt about that. You'll pay a premium for any service that you garnish after the regular business hours. We also say that just because they give you that information over the phone or perhaps in a messenger service, you still have the responsibility under current law, if you fire a guy, to give him that check right now. And what does right now mean? What does immediately mean? Does it mean you can wait for the guy to get back from lunch at the payroll service before you give him the check? I don't know. It's a little unclear.
May I inquire?
Go ahead.
We also, yeah, go ahead.
What if we got people in private industry to adopt the notion of suspension without pay for a reasonable amount of time and even recognized it in law? And the reason I'm getting at this, sometimes a cooling off period is important. And particularly for a small employer, they may say, you're fired. Get out of here. Whereas the day after, if it had been a suspension without pay and it wasn't a matter of saving face, they might have said, well, okay, you've come in, we're going to talk about it, and, well, you're not really, we'll keep you on, but don't do that again, and let's get on with life. And, I mean, tempers flare sometimes. And what if we said that this pay upon termination's there, the law won't be changed on that, but recognize that employers could suspend without pay for up to 48 hours or 72 hours to try to encourage them to have a cooling off time.
Well, in a sense, you know, that might be kind of the way they handle a layoff situation now, is that you're under employment, but you're not working, so you're laid off, right? Well, currently we have rules that address that. And it says, again, that under a layoff situation, wages earned to that time of layoff are paid at the next regularly scheduled pay date. And so we already have laws that would allow for that. And, in fact, they are covered there. I'd go on to say that the problem's getting bigger as we adjust as an industry. We're seeing more chain outlets come into the state, more franchise operations. Typically, these places operate out of a central headquarters location of some type, whether it's a central location itself or an office. And those companies will have payroll clerks, office management personnel that will be in charge of generating that payroll function. Oftentimes, there's no facility on the restaurant property itself that functions as an office, or very, very limited ability for a franchisee to do any book work at all.
Space next to the cash register.
Yeah, it's basically what it is. And in fact, when we get into an immediate termination system, what happens oftentimes is the guy says, oh, well, you worked 8 hours times $5, you might have X amount in, we'll figure 25% in withholdings, and he grabs some money out of the till and says, get out of here. You're taken care of. And so we think there's a lot of inaccuracy in payroll that undoubtedly occurs as a result of the current rule. When that happens, that costs money. I've got letters included in the testimony that state from the Shiloh Inns. They expect that it costs up to 35% more to process a check outside of its regular payroll cycle as it does within. And that's, again, just identifying the regular payroll system. And when you add in there the problems that can be multiplied when you have the loss of that, again, $40 worth of cash out of the cash register, and then you have to go in and figure out a way to tailor your system, so to speak, to adjust for that, then it is costly. And it is a burden, and it is getting more common for that burden to occur.
Mike, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions. You heard the testimony.
Yeah.
You've been in the back room listening. And you heard the subject brought up about the transit-type worker, and they need the money pretty quickly, and they're leaving town. And that is not addressed in your bill. The other thing that was addressed by the Department of Bureau of Labor was that sometimes employment or pay days are not set. And that would need to be addressed. Would you have any ideas how that would be addressed?
Yeah, I think so. We could essentially say that this would apply to employees that have regular paydays set. I think that would encompass almost everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think there is, as Representative Johnson pointed out, specific time periods within where employees must be paid. And so we could set that date in there somehow.
It's like
if we
a 35-day period, and you wouldn't expect.
That's a little big,
yeah.
And there's probably somewhere in there that a dated work. We also, I guess, say in the terms of transient workers, you know, if there's probably several industries that may have to have some special consideration. And I believe that, you know, we wouldn't obviously be adverse to any exceptions where it makes sense. Mm-hmm. We're trying to address, I think, the more broad spectrum of workers.
Well, I would agree that the payrolls have certainly gotten a lot more complicated, and the systems that they are paid, and you do have, we don't have many independent businesses. A lot of them are changed, and those are paid through central offices that are not open on weekends, and so I can understand that there could be a problem, but it isn't just one simple little problem that you can tell as we're trying to address here. There's a lot of people will be impacted negatively if this bill were to pass, and some positively. So
I understand that. I guess I point out in response to that in Washington State, our neighbor to the north, their law in regards to final paycheck is exactly what we're proposing.
Okay.
And for their case at least, it hasn't been too burdensome. It works up there. In Idaho, they have a law that says that final paycheck must be delivered within 10 days. Okay, so again, those two economies that seem to parallel Oregon's in many instances have made the determination that, in fact, it doesn't penalize the employee.
Your written testimony said Idaho said 10 days or next paycheck, regular payday, whichever
right.
comes first.
Yeah, whichever comes first. And so, again, ours would kind of fold that in there. California's 72 hours, even California's law is more realistic than Oregon.
That's 72 hours if the employee quits.
That's right.
Immediately in California if he's terminated.
Right. So that parallels us there. I'd say that, you know, our situation in Oregon probably is more economically parallel to the Washington and Idaho situation than it would be to California's.
We only emulate California when we want to, right?
Yeah, there we go. We think that in a lot of cases, the employee, through either actions that cause him to be terminated or by his own choice, are causing an unfair burden to be placed on employers because of this law. And we think that there are some changes that can be made that will address those. I guess say that employee-employer relationships in Oregon, except under contractual agreements or some kind of formal other arrangement, are at-will agreements. And that means at-will both on behalf of the employer and on behalf of the employee. And so as long as there's an understanding of what paydays are, then I would think that, in fact, employees don't often expect to have a consideration made by the employer for a choice that they make. I don't think you'd find that this would cause a lot of burden to a lot of employees. As far as the comments about, hey, this will hurt the people that live day to day, people don't get paid day to day right now. If they do, it's because of their working relationship and their existing agreement, and this bill wouldn't change that at all. That, in fact, would be their regular payday every day. If not, then they were used to adjusting their budgets for whatever period of time that they're dealing with. So, again, I really don't think the burden is going to exist that's been outlined.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
But we do have a transient or moving society, and a lot of people move on. And it seems to me we're talking about a lot of folks who are on the margin financially, and I don't know whether or not percentage-wise statistics have shown that they are more likely to be moving on than anyone else, but aren't they in the people who might be in the ones who most need to be paid right away so they can move on, not knowing where their next destination will be?
If that's the case, I would say that they could probably make that choice to move on at a time when it would coincide with the delivery of their paychecks. So, again, they're in a choice-making situation. Well, it's the employee that's making that
decision. Termination is not a matter of choice. In terms of choice, you want to quit.
That's right.
And we say that there's some leeway. It's when you've not made the choice, but you've been terminated, that we don't give much leeway. And we get both sides of this. Sure, I've heard from employers who find a lot of this very difficult and burdensome. But I also hear from people who have no money, and they're not talking to me about their discharge. They're coming to me as a legislator about they have no money, they don't qualify for welfare, their unemployment compensation check may or may not be coming, they've just been fired. The rent is due. They need groceries. What do they do? And if we say that someone can fire them and not pay them right away, we've added that much more to the social burden. And that's the whole problem. Maybe that's why I'm asking so many questions today, because I see both sides of this. And how do we make sure that those people are somehow taken care of at the same time we have a system that works efficiently?
Again, I'd say that our neighboring states have found that, in fact, they don't seem to be imposing undue burdens on those classes of workers, and I would not know why Oregon would have to be so much different in that regard.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Refine.
Thank you. Specifically more in line with construction industry, Mike, the regular pace is not always deemed, that's many times on completion of the services that are being delivered. I can see a flaw there. I mean, how do you get to the result of what you're driving at if you don't have in that industry a regular paycheck?
Again, I think that there will be exceptions for many, possibly, different industries, and specifically in terms of construction workers, I believe that they are a class of worker, and a construction worker is recognized in statute in several other instances, and perhaps amendments could be drafted that would take care of that.
Go ahead.
You heard us also commenting about this window of opportunity, maybe for suspension. Would that be a good alternative to this?
Representative Refine, again, I'd say that, in fact, that may exist now under the current layoff statutes or the rules regarding layoffs. And again, it allows again for payment of earned wages to be delivered at the regular payday. And so I'm not sure I'm discerning between a layoff and what you're calling a suspension without pay. To me, that's what a layoff is. And we've already got rules that address that.
I think Representative Mannix kind of gave you this scenario that, you know, you get mad at somebody, you fire them, but maybe there should be this, you know, in light of a cooling off period of time, that maybe it was just at the moment you were frustrated or the employee was frustrated, that it's an amazing little phraseology you could put in there to make a stopgap to get us off of this dilemma of after five and on weekends. That is not supposed to be, I mean, as you heard earlier testimony, that anything's possible. So if we're going to get past that point and offer some kind of little phraseology that gives enough wiggle room where you can just say to your employee, you know, you're suspended without pay, and we'll talk about this. It's Saturday at 2, but, you know, I'm not going to call the bookkeeper up to take your check, so I'm going to suspend you without pay, and we'll talk about this Monday, when reality is you're going to can the person anyhow based on that time o'clock, 2 o'clock Saturday. I mean, I don't really have any problem with that if that's the kind of wiggle room we're trying to get in society.
I believe that probably occurs in a lot of employment situations right now.
If you're using the law of layoff, then I would suspect whether or not that's legal. I mean, that's probably really stretching the interpretation of that. If we need to have the Bureau understand that the suspension without leave is a good policy decision for this, then maybe that's what we need to put in place.
The only additional response I'd have to that is there may be sometimes when the end of the employment agreement does need to occur at the time of termination. Could be the fact that the employee has keys to your establishment, and when you tell him that he's suspended without pay, goes home.
Mr. Chairman, I guess, you know, I don't think the law would deprive an employer of terminating right there on the spot if they want. I'm just saying if the other mechanisms are not in place that he believes that the conditions are such that he has to terminate.